The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning. How's the sound? It's okay for most people. I just want to check. I see some hearing assist devices. Okay. Good. So, I want to look today at the connection between a couple of the heart qualities that are talked about in these teachings that we're learning. In particular, the Buddha talked about four qualities of the heart that develop naturally through practice or can be deliberately cultivated in various ways. I won't go into a lot of detail on them, but just so you have the overview, these qualities are metta, or loving-kindness, karuna, or compassion, mudita, or empathetic joy, also called altruistic joy, and upekkha, which is equanimity. I like to think of these as safe homes for the mind, in a sense. Sometimes the word used is the ancient Indian word for these, which is brahma-vihara, and that literally means divine abode, if you will. But you can think of this as meaning a safe home, a place to rest, or a way of thinking or approaching experience where the mind is not getting itself in trouble, basically. Because we know how much trouble it is to be caught up in greed or anger or fear or confusion. The mind is just getting itself in trouble. And then there are other times when the mind is somehow able to see things a little bit stepped back or with kindness or with a sense of care about the suffering that's occurring in some way. And we know what that feels like too. And if the mind is able to just be in a state like that, it's so much easier to flow with experience. So in our tradition, we place loving-kindness or goodwill or friendliness, this quality metta, we sort of place that first in the list. You know, that was what I said first. This is the fundamental good heart that we cultivate in order to meet the world with friendliness and goodwill, essentially. And so it's even said sometimes that the other three that follow after are additional forms of love, ways of loving in the presence of suffering or in the presence of happiness or in the presence of the changing circumstances of life that always happen. So these other ones are also forms of this kind of loving kindness. But I'd like to point out that there are other orders that these are listed in other Buddhist traditions, and in particular in the Tibetan tradition, equanimity comes first, and the other three are seen as forms of equanimity. And that sounds maybe odd to us, and we don't need to go into those teachings. I'm only saying this in a sense that that either of these, I think, could be seen as fundamental. There's something to this. To beginning with a sort of a balance in the mind and saying that that is the foundation for cultivation of the heart, some kind of balance of mind. After all, in our tradition, we talk about mindfulness as being the most fundamental meditation practice we do and the most fundamental thing that we first develop and which is actually going to carry us all the way. And in a sense, there's a bit of equanimity in the development of mindfulness, right? This is where we stand back a little bit and we look at experience as it's unfolding in this very connected but detached or non-attached kind of way. And this is related to the quality of equanimity. So let's look a little bit. Is there a link between equanimity and loving-kindness, between a balanced, clear mind and a heart that is warm and open? More and more, I've seen in my own practice how these are intimately related and even overlapping. And we might say, oh, those sound different. They're even overlapping. And I think that each one doesn't go very deep without some significant cultivation of the other. That's what I've come to be seeing. They enrich and nourish each other in many ways. So consider the phrase, to be seen is to be loved. To be seen is to be loved. So this is immediately true, I think, with children who must be seen as they are without projections from their parents in order to feel fully loved. Not that we always achieve this, but it's so clear, you know, when we do see that happening, what a nourishment it is for the child to really be seen. And many people during the process of their Dharma practice have to go through some kind of processing around the fact that they were not fully seen as children. That's important for us to have in some way at some stage. I remember when I very first came to IMC, which was a long time ago, and I don't remember a lot about it. I came for a day long with some other people that I knew who knew Gil, but I didn't know him because I had never been here. And when we arrived, we were standing around in the outer hall, and he came through, and I was introduced just as part of the group because he came to say hello to the people that he knew. And it's hard to describe, but I remember that meeting in a way that that struck me. It wasn't a huge experience. It was actually very just a normal, casual saying of hello. But in that moment where he greeted me, I felt completely seen. And it took me later to identify what it was why that experience stuck in memory. But it was because I was completely seen, and he didn't know anything about me. But it was just a very kind meeting with goodwill and friendliness, and it had an impact because of his seeing me. No projection, no nothing, just friendliness. And then this is true in our meditation also, right? So we may have experiences that arise in our meditation where we don't really want that experience to be arising, right? You know, oh, why am I seeing this anger again? Or why am I having this memory again? Or, darn, it was peaceful earlier in my meditation and now I feel agitated. And so you don't want that agitation, or you don't want to be seeing, or you don't want, you know, you wish you didn't have such a mind that was so jealous or something like that. Oh, why is my mind like that? These are all instances of not meeting our experience with goodwill. Right, we're meeting our experience itself with ill will, with I don't want you to be here. Why are you here? You know, we might not say that to another person, but we say that to our own minds and our own hearts so often. Is it really nice or kind, I should say, to tell our experience that it is inappropriate or not wanted in some way? How's that going to feel? At some level, that doesn't feel helpful to the heart. Have we ever tried instead just putting our arm around that mind state and gently and lovingly telling it that it is a mind state that brings suffering? We don't need to indulge it, but it's very helpful not to reject it. And over time, seeing what's in our mind without indulging it has the effect of, in a way, giving it what it needs, and then it can relax and release in some way that it wouldn't quite be able to do if we were putting it outside of what we considered acceptable. So this is this ability to see things exactly as they are, being itself an act of love, of nourishment, of care, that allows things to, in a sense, move on, develop. I'm in a a painting group right now, which is a kind of a new thing for me, so I'm the novice. But we, it's really quite inspiring to get together and paint with this group of people, and we talk about the process of doing the art. And it's, I find there are many links between this and spiritual practice. In particular, just as a small example, it's very common when one does art, you know, you sit down for an hour and you produce a painting of some kind, to judge it in various ways. Oh, that came out so bad, or, oh, you know, this part's okay, but the colors aren't right, or this stroke didn't ever look good, and I could never quite, you know, whatever it is, the mind is all the time about, you know, whatever you've produced doesn't look quite right. And so we talked about the difference between judgment and discernment. So this is something we talk about in spiritual practice also, right, is that judgment has a way of closing things down, shutting things out. You can feel that. Whereas discernment is kind of the same quality of the mind. It's the same ability to assess and see differences between things. But discernment has a way of brightening experience somehow, of picking out what is, you know, what is useful and helpful and beautiful in things, and kind of nourishing those. And then while we were talking about this, one woman who's an experienced painter said, well, you know, sometimes I can not even go there and just be in the position of seeing my painting and calling it observation. And I thought, oh yeah, you know, that's, we do that too in practice. And so if the mind has already fallen into judgment, you're already in that aversive space, then it's useful to kind of say, okay, how can I use this more as discernment and a little bit less as judgment? But if it's possible not even to go into that space, then you know, then we're in the realm of observation, of seeing, just seeing it as it is. Maybe we'll see something different than if we're applying a lens of judgment to it. So mindfulness is sometimes called kind attention, and there's a reason for that. These days, sometimes teachers even call it loving attention, to emphasize the completely non-hostile relationship to experience that practice cultivates. But I think we could say that if our intention is to see things as they are and really understand this life, this heart, this practice, this path that we're on, to really understand that, we're going to have to see and include everything. And that means that nothing can be cut out as it shouldn't be here. It's not welcome. It's not appropriate. Eventually, it's got to include all of that. As the greatest act of love we can give to ourselves and to the world is to see it as it is, to see it completely. This is a poem by Eric Fried called What It Is. It is nonsense, says reason. It is what it is, says love. It is a disaster, says logic. It is nothing but pain, says fear. It is hopeless, says common sense. It is what it is, says love. It is ridiculous, says pride. It is foolhardy, says prudence. It is impossible, says experience. It is what it is, says love. So, may your practice be one of seeing and loving. Thank you.